This is the Investor Coaching Show podcast with your host, Paul Winkler, a show that helps you relax about money. Most of the information we get about investing is from people trying to sell financial products. Paul and his team are investment managers and educators who believe an informed investor is a more confident investor. With over 30 years in the financial industry and with 8 financial planning related designations, Paul, along with his team of degreed planners, brings a unique perspective to the world of money. You can download his free PDF entitled The Recipe for Relaxing About Money by going to paulwinkler.com/relax. Now, here's the Investor Coaching Show with your host, Paul Winkler.
Hey, and welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler. Talk about the world of money and investing, and sometimes whatever else happens to come up. And kind of a fun show, because it'll be all over the place. Got in this hour. Never done this before. I think it'd be fun to do it. One of we got a host of guys that work with us, and ladies from all walks of life. I don't know if you're here, some ladies, they are Arlene and Anne. From time to time, come in here, and Evan will come in here, and Ira will come in here, and if we can ever get Jonathan in here, it'd be really good. He listens to the show, and then we're going to shame him into coming on the show. And then, of course, Jim comes on from time to time, and we'll forget it. So today on the show with me, for this hour anyway, got Michael Sharpnick up from in the Goodlettsville office. And if you've ever been up to the Goodlettsville office, you know exactly who I'm talking about. It's Michael's up there, and he's does a lot of behind the scenes work. We're going to bring him more in front of the scenes as time goes on, because he's been going through, well, you're like, how many, Michael, how many of the certified, or this, well, the, we have 2 different financial planning degrees, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. I'm pretty much indifferent between the two of them. I think one has a better marketing program than the other. Certified financial planners have a better marketing program. And, you know, there's the difference in classes. They're basically the same exact classes. A chartered financial consultant has a couple extras, and certified financial planner just has the comprehensive test at the end. So they're just little differences. It's you know, I find it interesting that in the financial planning world, you have 2 colleges that do the vast majority of the educating of financial planners. Whereas if you're in the medical field, you've got, you know, hundreds probably of medical schools around the country. And why is it that there are only a couple financial planning schools? I never quite got that. But then, you know, let's just talk a little bit about the curriculum really quick, just to give people an idea of what it is when you're a financial planner. What are the things that you learn? So you've been through, for example, there were 8 classes or 9 classes?
8 classes in the CHFC designation. Okay. Now that they consolidated, there were 10.
Yeah, that's when I went 9. Through it. It was 10.
Yeah, right? And then they've consolidated all into one class in addition to the CFP curriculum.
Okay, so without spending a whole lot of time on it, let's just walk through some of the things that a planner should know. And this is not required. To call yourself a financial advisor, you don't have to have any of these. So this is one of the reasons that I want to bring this up, is because most people don't realize what their advisors don't know. Number one, you have a class on income taxation. So you go through pretty detailed study of our income tax system, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have insurance.
Insurance, yep.
You'll also have a class on investments. You have classes which go into very detailed, you know, about the investing world and how different investment vehicles work and things like that. You also estate planning, and you work through a estate planning class. And what are some of the other things, like financial planning applications?
Yep, that's the one I'm in now. Retirement planning.
Retirement planning.
The other one goes into 401ks and all the different types of plans there. Then there's the general, it's kind of a general principles class, talks about the financial planning process, and it also throws education planning into that one as well.
Okay, so you deal with different types of education funding vehicles. So mm-hmm. I just want you to get the idea that this is why I'm so adamant about the education process. Now, Michael, I want to talk a little bit about something. Let's just go into a kind of a fun little discussion. Now, you're in your late 20s?
Mm-hmm. 27, about to be 28.
So, for your age group, now one of the things that I found is I got into this business when I was 25, and that's where I started out. So you and I started about, you know, same time age-wise. Mm-hmm. Now, from a perspective of the people that were around you, the peers around you, I didn't really think about it. When I worked for a company, I worked for a large corporation, and we didn't even think necessarily about our retirement plans at work. But when you talk to people your age, and I don't want to throw anybody your age under the bus, but yeah. Let's just talk a little bit about what typically goes through their minds and some of the challenges that you deal with when talking to friends and family members and you know, what do they typically focus much on financial planning? Question.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, like with any age group, I think there's a pretty wide range of, mm-hmm. you know, there are a couple friends who are pretty into investing and, mm-hmm. but the majority of people my age and in this kind of age group, I think, are just very concerned about what's in front of them, you know, their career, advancing in their career, buying a house, you know, cars and these kind of things, and investing, retirement, those kind of things are very much on the back burner of their mind and their life.
So they don't necessarily think a whole lot about the future. Do they talk about it? Do they just feel like, it's not, have you ever asked them about it? And they say, it's not really that important to me right now. I got a lot of time. Or what is the reason that they typically give?
Yeah, I think they think it's important. It's just that they see the things immediately on their plate as more important, you know.
Well, that's that one workshop that I like to teach every month before we actually go into the in-depth stuff about investing, which is discovering true purpose for money and those types of things. One of the things I talk about in that workshop is the level of savings and how, you know, people don't typically save a whole lot, and what's the reason that they give. And one of the biggest reasons in the studies is that they just don't have enough, mm-hmm. you know, that they don't make enough. Is that part of it?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because, you know, you talk to people who in different jobs and different careers, even at my age, who make different amounts. And, you know, I think that they want to spend all that they have on, you know, they see the next thing that they, you know, the next trend, they want to have a nicer car, they want to have a nicer house. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a lot of pressure, even if not, it's not direct, there's a lot of pressure, like implicit, to kind of be cool, be in what's trending, you know, go to the cooler bar and drink the cooler things. Mm-hmm. And you know, and that is a lot of money.
Being cool costs a lot of money.
It does. I mean, it really does, you know.
And it was funny because we were talking about this last week, Arlene and I, and we were just talking about that study of people that drive really super expensive cars, and it was tongue-in-cheek. It was talking about how this one study showed that they were jerks, and you know, that's a very blanket statement. Everybody that drives an expensive car is a jerk, and it was kind of funny tongue-in-cheek type of stuff. But the point being is that they found that as the value of the car went up, people were less courteous to each other. Is really, and I was making the joke that, well, okay, guys, I've given you the permission slip not to go and spend a lot of money on an expensive car. And I think one of the things that younger generation has in some circles has gotten right is that, you know, going after bigger, better, faster, and all of that isn't really that big of a status symbol. But to some, it is. But maybe they've just changed the status symbol. It's not material things, and now all of a sudden it's experiences, and I hadn't really thought about that till just now.
I think that's absolutely true. I think my generation highly values experiences. You know, I know a lot of people who travel, you know, like to eat out, try new foods, see places, hiking, you know, just all kinds of things like that. They really value a lot.
Well, that's fascinating, because there was a Wall Street Journal article, probably, oh gosh, it's got to be 5-10 years from, man, maybe that long ago, I can't remember. But it talked about how we value experiences over things because we anticipate an experience and we can't wait to go on the trip. once we go on the trip, we're having fun on the trip. And then when we get back, we talk about the trip for a long time. Whereas when we anticipate buying the car, we end up with this, oh, when's this stupid car going to get here? When are they going to bring it? When is the factory going to put the dog on? And your anticipation, maybe it might be a little bit of anxious anticipation. You get the car and you're pretty excited at first. But then, you know, weeks later, you know, the newness has worn off and the car is getting old. And you notice that your friend has a nicer car than you, whereas you don't go and compare to your friend when it comes to their vacation. You had a nicer vacation than me. Isn't what goes through people's minds. So in a way, maybe they fixed a problem, but now the experience is becoming all-consuming. And now what's happening is they're spending a lot of money, you know, to constantly be entertained. And maybe is it a boredom with life that causes, I've got to have something that, what's the next adrenaline rush? And it makes me think about that because, you know, let me kind of tell you where that's coming from. There was a video I saw this week. Fascinating. Sent it to a buddy of mine. He was like, oh my gosh, that's gold, Paul. But it was talking about, and I said to my son, he probably could care less. His dad, this is from dad, who cares? But it was about dopamine. And it was this study of, it was rats, I believe, that they did. And what they had done is they had taken the receptors. And they had these receptors and they wired them up. And what they did is they actually triggered dopamine release in one part of the study. And then what they did is they took away the dopamine in the other part of the study. Now, what was interesting is when they took away the dopamine and they actually stopped the brain from actually secreting the chemical into the brain, the rats lost all motivation. They didn't want to get up. They didn't want to eat. They didn't want to move. They didn't want to do anything that rats normally would want to do. And what they found was like, whoa, dopamine is like really, really important for motivation. So they said, okay, here's the thing. If you want to get motivated to do things in life, dopamine's the answer. Now, everything actually causes the secretion of dopamine is one of the points that they made. You know, if you want to get a drink of water, when you're drinking water, dopamine is secreted. If you want to go and watch a TV show, dopamine is secreted. If you're playing a video game, dopamine is secreted in greater amounts. If you are a drug addict, you are secreting lots of dopamine. The drug is actually creating that extra secretion, which is what people get addicted to. And the point being that is, let's say if you want to do something that is laudable, that is really helpful for your future, like saving money, like studying, like going and reading a book that's important for your career rather than going and playing a video game, it won't secrete much dopamine. Now, it'll secrete some, but it won't secrete much. So his point in this, in all of this, is that sometimes what you've got to do is you've got to do a reset. And his recommendation was that you ought to pick a day that and do this little by little, because you don't want to go cold turkey on this. And you probably won't do it if you go cold turkey. But you pick a day in which you won't do anything that is something that creates lots of dopamine secretion. So in other words, what you won't do, you'll say, okay, I am not going to be doing any coffee that day, let's say, or I won't be doing any, and some people are like, oh, horrors, Paul, just shut up right now. But I won't play video games for that day. I won't watch a movie that day. I won't, now, if your thing is drugs, I'm not going to do drugs that day. But, you know, what will happen is you will actually decrease, you're actually weaning your body off of this dopamine rush. And what do you do? And he had a list of things to do. You know, like one of them might be meditation or going on a walk or, you know, things that are helping, you know, going and or working out or doing something like that. You find other things to actually occupy your time during that particular day. And what you're doing is you're weaning yourself off of it. And then you'll do this just little by little. And eventually what will happen is going and reading a book for your career, or going and taking a course, or going and working on a project that you've been meaning to work on, maybe work on that book you've always been talking about writing. Now, all of a sudden, that little bit of dopamine you get from doing that activity will addict you to doing things that you previously didn't want to do. Now, for a younger person, that's important because back to what I was talking about is this whole thing about experiences that you brought up. Think about it. I got this dopamine rush from going to the coffee bar, going hanging out with friends, and I'm addicting myself to these things that are costing a lot of money, and then I'm not getting the things done that are really important in life.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really fascinating. There's another thing I think about related to that. I'm thinking about this, but I hadn't said it out loud. But I think, you know, working here, we meet a lot of people who are in their 50s or older,
sure,
and they're nearing retirement. And there's a vast variety of where people are at. You know, some people have prepared really well and really set, but everybody, just about everybody, is concerned about running out of money in retirement. And are they going to have enough? Are they going to make it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I feel like younger people, they don't think of themselves at that age. You know, and they don't think of what is it going to be like, or so focused on the moment and now that they don't think about, you know, am I going to have enough in retirement? Is it going to be enough? You know, and I feel like, you know, putting yourself in someone's shoes and almost thinking through that, what's it like to not really have as much as I thought I should have at this point? And you know, and now I'm a little bit worried about, I'm really tired, I don't feel like working much anymore. You know, it's and what happens if, you know, a health problem happens, you know, or how am I going to provide for myself? And that's a real concern for people that I think younger people aren't aware of.
And trying to get, how do you get younger people to think that way, though, is always the age-old, you know, and some of the psychology out there says that what you need to do is go and get one of those apps, and you take a picture of yourself, and you age yourself. And then once you age yourself, and there's a study that actually was done, it was interesting, where they did that, and they said, okay, so they found that people wouldn't save money for themselves in the future because they saw themselves as a stranger. And I've talked about that a number of times. So how do you get people to say, well, what they did is they artificially aged people in one study, and then they showed themselves images. They showed the people in the study images of themselves artificially aged. And then what they did is they gave them a sum of money. And they said, okay, now here's the sum of money you've gotten, this amount of money. What are you going to spend it on? And they said, well, you could spend it on yourself. You could spend it on a friend. You could give it to a charity. Or you could put it in your retirement plan. There may have been more alternatives than that. I don't remember exactly what was in the study. And they found that overwhelmingly, people were far more likely to choose the alternative of putting it in a retirement plan if they had seen an image of themselves aged. Isn't that interesting?
That's fascinating, yeah.
So I think that may be the critical thing to do with younger people is to do that with them. So, you know, as far as, you know, people with their 401ks, typically what do you hear people talk about their 401ks? Do they talk much about what they do with their 401ks at work?
You know, I think most people are confused about their 401ks. They don't maybe really know how it works. They don't, you know, I know some people who don't take advantage of the match at their 401k. And I mean, just as a general tip for young people, I think that's one of the biggest things. At the very least, take advantage of the match. That's literally free money that you're passing up on, you know.
So let's do this. Take a quick break. And I want you to tell, just what would you say to a person your age that is coming in and going, okay, I need to get this thing straight. What advice would you give them? And I think about that during the break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk more about, you know, what do we want to tell younger people right now? If we could just shake them and say, okay, here, think about this. What kind of advice do we want to give them? You're listening to Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler, along with Mr. Michael Sharpnick in here with me right now on the show. We'll be back right after this. And we're back. Winkler Coaching Show.
Working real hard for the U.S. dollar. Living real poor, gonna make me holler. I don't wanna live in the streets like some folks.
Okay, so if you don't wanna live in the streets like some folks do, you better listen up. All right, Michael Sharpnick from the Goodlettsville office, one of the planning assistants helping up there with folks. We do all kinds of stuff with sophisticated software programs, and it's always good to have your token millennial up there to help out with these types of things. That's what Michael does up there. Okay, so back to this. We're talking about for younger people that are trying to get started, and what are the things that you would focus on for a younger person that is trying to figure out their way and make their way through this financial jungle?
Yeah, I think there's several things. First, I already mentioned, you know, taking advantage of your employer match. I think that's really an essential first step. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may have to make a little bit of a lifestyle sacrifice in order to take that out of the budget. But I think you find as you do that it, you know, you get used to it, you know, whether it's cutting back on the premium cable subscription or having to say no a couple more times to hanging out with friends. You know, as my wife and I have gotten a little more lately, more conscious about saving and planning a little more than even we had, we've been having to say no a little more often. We find that it gets easier. You know, you get more confident and feel good.
Oh, no, that's really interesting. Kind of walk me through that. So you're talking to somebody who says, hey, can you go out and do this? And how do you typically handle that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, hey, we're going here. We're going to eat out here. We're going to go here and do this. And it's, you know, we just have to say, you know, it's not in the budget right now. We're I'm gonna have to stay home. Sorry, guys. You know.
Yeah, do they ridicule you?
Sometimes. Be honest.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just two ways to have biggest house in town. I always tell people: one is to build it. The second way is knock everybody else's house down.
Yeah.
You know? So they're just knocking your house down.
Yeah. But you know,
some people can't handle that though. It's like they can't handle, you know, so somebody comes back and, what a fuddy duddy.
Party pooper.
Party pooper. Yeah, yeah, they don't call you a fuddy duddy anymore. That's old. That's old school.
Yeah.
But you know, you have to be a big person to be able to take that kind of, harassment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to be able to, and then, you know, to me, I look at it and just go, you know, it reminded me, I was telling a client of a story this week about that, and it was about a guy that I used to do cold calling businesses, and I would go door to door and blah blah blah, and I walked in one guy's office, and he was a very successful guy, very successful business person. And you know, the funniest thing was is I went in there to try to sell this guy on something. He sold me on a way of thinking that I had not really spent a lot of time thinking about, and it was wonderful. He said he used to work at a very large corporation here in town. I won't name the company, but he would be at work, and his job was to monitor these gauges and things at the company. So he wasn't always busy doing the work of the company. You know, he had time to be able to do things on the side and just keep an eye on things. Well, he made a comment to me. He says, I would be studying, and he was talking about these things that he would be studying. It was business. And he goes, all the people that worked with me to go, oh, you know, George, he's going to be a rich guy one of these days. And his friends were all knocking him down. And it was just fascinating. Mm-hmm. That his response was looking up at him and going, yep, that's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was going to knock him down, or they were, but it didn't matter to him. And he basically pushed it off. And now the guys that were picking on him are struggling. And he has done very well in life and doesn't go back and go, nan, 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 or nothing like that. I mean, he's a mature guy. But the reality of it was that he had to take a lot of picking and just walk right past it. And sometimes you're going to have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people say, oh, Ken, why don't you come out? Oh, man, you're a loser. Why don't you come out? Why are you going and staying home all night long? You don't even know how to have any fun anymore, Michael. And you're like, no, I've got a bigger thing in mind. I've got a bigger future in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that fear of missing out plays a big role into that. But I think when you focus on that goal, exactly that future, you know, you focus on the goal, you know, you find that those things don't affect you as much, that pressure or that, mm-hmm. you know, those fears don't affect you as much.
So that's kind of how you look at things, is you basically walk through this and your friends. So the advice you'd give them would be, what are the types of things you'd be thinking about giving your friends advice and go, hey, you ought to be doing what I'm doing. So what types of things would you tell them besides, you know, make sure you take advantage of the match in your 401k?
Yeah. So, you know, another thing I think about with my generation in particular is, you know, so I'm going to give my young age here, but in 2008, when we had the really big downturn, I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
and that affected our family significantly. You know, my dad was in the construction-related business doing truss design.
Oh, wow.
And his company actually went out of business completely.
Yeah, that hit the real estate industry very hard, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So he was out of work for a while, and, you know, in general, the economy was slowing, so no one was hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And he was unemployed for a little while, and that hit our family hard. And then when I graduated high school, you know, my parents had a little bit of money saved for college, and that fund still hadn't recovered fully. So mm-hmm. it was lower than it could have been, you know. So those things really played heavily in my mind and my view of, you know, kind of the stock market, you know. And I even remember from history class, you know, watching movies on the Great Depression and how
right.
people had lost everything.
How about money in emergency funds? Did that hit you thinking about, whoa, wait a minute, we ought to have money set aside for these types of eventualities, because it would have been nice to have a bunch of money on the sideline?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's not something that had crossed my mind, but I think just that whole idea that, yeah, if we didn't have that money on the sidelines, or how the stock market drop affected us, you know, it played in my mind that I really viewed the stock market as gambling,
mm-hmm.
you know, and as... you know, you can hit it big, but you can also lose a lot, you know. And so you really, you know, those are for really risky people and people who, you know, want to gamble, but that wasn't for someone who's really trying to save and do things well.
Mm. So one of the things that comes to mind for that, for me, just thinking about, you know, you're in a business that could be subject to cycles. And this is something that I tell people to think about. Look at your typical emergency. So people ask me, how much money do you have, Paul, in an emergency fund? And I'll say, well, what could be an emergency that you might have? And for some people, they're in a government job, let's say, and their job is as scary as a day is long, or maybe they're a teacher and they got tenure or something like that. Their likelihood of losing their job is very, very small. You could get away with less of an emergency fund, which is ironic because that's the opposite of what people often do. If you're very risk averse, you might go into, my father was very risk averse, you go and get a government job. And the reality of it is, you might be very risk averse, get a government job, but you also might have a really huge emergency fund sitting in CDs because you're risk averse, mm-hmm. which is, no, that's actually the person that could take more risk in market-based investments. So it's the exact opposite is the way you may want to approach it. But thinking about your industry, if you're in an industry that could go through a downturn, you might want to have a bigger emergency fund than the average person. So think in terms of that. You know, think of how much of my job is based on the market cycle. You may actually look at your asset mix in your investment portfolio and not have as much as in stocks as another person that isn't as subject to that. You know, so some of those things to think about. So as far as that goes, so emergency fund, that would be one thing you'd tell them to think about.
Absolutely.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break just so we stay on task here and stay on the clock here. And let's talk about some other advice that you may think about giving, because this is kind of bringing up some good things for me too. Listening to the Investor Coaching Show right here on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. Paul Winkler along with Michael Sharpnick. We'll be back right after this. And back here on the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler along with Michael Sharpnick up in the Goodlettsville office, making his debut appearance on the Investor Coaching Show. We decided we'd just talk a little bit about younger people and have a little fun and talk about younger people and planning for the future. Okay, Michael, so other advice that you would give somebody that's a younger person trying to get their feet on the ground when it comes to their finances. We talked about making sure you take advantage of the match and the 401k plans, maybe saying no to friends and when they're saying, hey, let's go out, and you're saying, nah, you know what, it's not in the budget, and I got a future that might be a little bit bigger than going and having, blowing a bunch of money on coffee that costs more than it ever should. Nothing wrong with having some coffee that's expensive, but maybe not necessarily something we ought to be spending our livelihood on. So what other advice?
Yeah, you mentioned build an emergency fund. I think
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Is important. And we actually ended up deciding to cut back, and maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but cut back on the 401k contributions in order to build our emergency fund to a place.
But you're going up to the match, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
As long as you're taking advantage of my whole match. I mean, I'm cool. I'm not going to get all over you on that one.
Yes, taking advantage of that.
He's taking me for everything I'm worth. Okay, so good. You're still going up to that, and you're cutting back so that you could build up the emergency fund.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I think that's important to have that in the background as a safety net. You know, you talk about 3 to 6 months living expenses as a general rule, and that's kind of our goal right now, and then start putting back in the 401k.
Are you doing anything for kids' college education right now?
You know, I'm not, okay. And that is in the plans.
I'm not that I don't, you know how I think about that.
Yeah,
you know, make sure you're flying, you put the mask on yourself first before you go and put the mask on somebody else in the plane. So the idea is prepare for yourself, because otherwise your boy's going to be taking care of you when they're older, and boys aren't really good at taking care of people. You know, you know, so you guys need to have a little girl.
Yeah, I know. We're waiting. My wife wants a girl too. We got two boys. For those who don't know. But yeah, I take that kind of approach too, of taking care of ourselves first. You know, I know that there are options to pay for college. I think once we kind of feel a little more stable with our emergency fund and our level of saving, I do want to open some 529s in the future and start doing that as well.
And you got some time for that. So 529 is basically a college fund the state puts on. We typically, when we look at different states, we're looking for states that are giving us asset categories that we want. And I'm a control freak. I want to be able to choose the mix and allocate it myself, because a lot of times the state allocations are pretty flawed. Let me just put it that way. So that's one thing. Now, what else? What are the types of things you're giving advice to friends when they're talking, you know, about their finances? You mentioned, we talked a little bit about education and training and things like that. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, for me, you know, I naturally love learning, and I think one thing I've noticed, I think this is just, I really can thank God for that, is really it, but I guess I just believe that I can learn something if I put my mind to it. Mm-hmm. But I find, you know, people struggle with that sometimes, like, oh, you hear, I'm just bad at math, or I'm just bad at that, and I think that, you know, you already have a preconceived idea, and so you're not going to put the effort into it, and so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, as like Henry Ford used to say, if I think I can or if I think I can't, you're right.
Absolutely. So I think that's helped me, you know, motivate myself to learn and grow, but I'm always reading and learning and, you know, trying to improve myself in that way.
So when you pick up things, do you typically pick up things that are in your industry, or are you or in what you do in the line of work, or are you just all over the place?
I'm all over the place. I mean, the past 2 years, it's pretty much all been focused on the curriculum for the courses. But I really find just whatever I find interesting. You know, I'm very interested in the sciences and philosophy. Those are two.
I think that's important to be that way. And the reason I say that, which may sound weird that I'm saying, I think it's good that you don't do everything in the industry that you're in, because there are so many times, if you look at innovations of mankind, the greatest innovations of mankind have been when you've combined two things from two different worlds to create something new. Now, you may think of the old commercial where the guy's walking down the road with peanut butter and the other dude's walking down the road with chocolate, and they run into each other and you got a Reese's peanut butter cup, right? But, you know, think in terms of the light bulb. You know, the light bulb was, hey, let's take and run electricity through this thing, and the electricity will make a piece of metal burn, but we've got to make sure that it doesn't burn up. So what do we do? Oh, we can actually take a look at how when you start fires and you actually burn, burn refuse of some sort, like wood particles and things like that. But if you want it to burn without burning up, you actually cover it with dirt. You create a vacuum so it smolders for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And they found that by starving it of oxygen, it would burn for a much longer period of time. And you think about, okay, well, that's how the electrical light bulb came about. We have this piece of filament that is inside of a glass tube that is a vacuum, so therefore there's no air. It will burn for a long period of time, but it won't burn up. So you've taken two totally different things and you put them together to create something new. I look in my industry and I'm going right now, and everybody knows this because I talk about it so much, finance and psychology, math and the mind. You know, put them together, you've got something pretty powerful right there. So you look at science, so you look at the different disciplines, you can take whatever you do for a living and then add something from a totally different industry. I mean, think of the models of how businesses work. A lot of times businesses are always stealing. We're always stealing from other industries. You know, right now we're in the process. Michael and I are in the process. We've been working on this with another gentleman on coming up with a curriculum for young people. And we're looking at it and going, well, you know, young people don't have necessarily the assets of people in their 50s. So you hear investment firms go, if you have over X amount of money, you know, come see us. And it's like implicitly they're saying, not implicitly, explicitly, they're saying, if you don't have a ton of money, we don't care about you. Mm-hmm. You know, and I look at that and go, is there a model somewhere in an industry that we can steal to come up with something that we can borrow, that we can use for younger people? And hence, one of the things that we're actually building is a curriculum for younger people that they do a monthly subscription for, and at the end of a period of time that, you know, I think we're probably thinking maybe a couple of years, mm-hmm. where we can get people really on a super, super firm foundation for the rest of their life, we'll get you where you not only have your goals, and talk a little bit about that, because we've talked a little bit about what that needs to look like, and from your perspective, what do you see that we're doing that's intriguing?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this process. There's a lot that goes into it, but building, you know, getting a foundation of education, basic finance, you know, what are the different types of accounts? What's the difference between a Roth and a traditional IRA, and when should I be going into one versus the other? You know, understanding the basics of compound interest and time value money and how important that is.
Time value money is huge.
Yes, and especially when you're young, that's kind of a sidebar there, but you know, that's one of the reasons why it's so important to start young is that compounding value. But you know, starting with your goals and working through that and getting a foundation education, and
how
then
to set goals.
How to set goals, what are the types of goals that are most important, how do you focus on your goals, you know, and then how do we get a plan together that can most efficiently help us reach those goals.
And another thing that I have found really helpful in the years that I've done this, because I used to be your age, you know, one time, so I've had to deal with these types of things. But, you know, one of the things that I did with people is I said, okay, what are your biggest fears? And helping people overcome their biggest fears. And that's going to be a big part of it as well. It's not only setting a goal, but typically what stops us from setting goals is we have some kind of a fear in the back of our mind or some belief system that is stopping us from doing what we ought to be doing. I had a client of mine say this, and we got to run to a break here real quick, but I've got to say this. He made a comment to me about how so many people are trying to, they have a scarcity mentality is the way, it's not the way he put it, it's the way I put it. And I says, oh my goodness. I said, I had the same thing when I started this radio show. I always believed if I got out there in the public with all of this academic material on investing, that the investing industry would take it and they would run with it. And then they would outcompete little Paul Winkler out of Goodlettsville, Tennessee. And we would be destitute and things wouldn't work. And a friend of mine gave me the best piece of advice ever. He said, they will never change their ways. There is too much advantage to them to continue down the road that they've always gone down, and they won't change their ways. And you know, he was absolutely right. But what is it that holds you back from doing big things? There may be something totally different but related to that. So let's do this. Let's take a quick break and be right back after this. You're listening to the Investor Coaching Show right here on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. All right, we're back here on the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler along with Michael Sharp next. So, man, this hour's flown. I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. It's like, where did the time go? Okay, so other things. What are the other thoughts that come to your mind for younger people giving advice and saying, hey, here's some of the things to think about?
Yeah, one of the last things that comes to my mind is this generation, I feel like, is very socially conscious, very passionate about social justice issues and
Absolutely.
Helping other people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think about for younger people, you know, is if you save and plan well and build a retirement savings, when you hit that retirement age now and you have enough assets to be able to live on comfortably, you free yourself to really focus. And now you're older, you're wiser, you have more ideas, and you have the resources to accomplish them and the time to accomplish them. Kids are out of the house, you're not working full time. Mm-hmm. You can really achieve some great things in that state versus, oh, I didn't save and now I'm stuck on Social Security and not able to do what I want.
That's fascinating, Michael, because one of the things that people do as they get older, what they do is they become generative. In other words, they start to focus on what the legacy is that they're going to leave for the rest of the world. And they're a lot more clear as far as what legacy they, like you said, they're wiser. They actually know more about the world. They know what works. They know what doesn't work. And, you know, sometimes when you're younger, you bang your head up on the wall. You think that this will work, this will work. And then you realize, oh, wait, maybe the world doesn't quite work like that. But as you get older, now you have that knowledge and that wisdom. And now if you have the resources, you can pass on some really good stuff. I mean, I just think about at this point in my life, and I'm starting to look around, and I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. I had a conversation with a client of mine. And he listens all the time. So he's a CPA. And made a comment to me about how you're in a spot, Paul. You are in a spot where you're able to do things that, you know, that a lot of people aren't able to do. And I says, you know, man, I says, you're exactly right. And I see so much good that can come out of it. And that to me is so exciting. Being in a position in your life where you've prepared, because I've been a financial planner since I was 25. Now, all of a sudden, you can transition that life into something really, really exciting and really help. And you've got all this wisdom, all these years of experience behind you. Man, that was probably the most exciting part of the whole hour.
Yeah.
What a great way to end, man. Michael Sharpnack here with me, Paul Winkler, this Investor Coaching Show. PaulWinkler.com is the website, so you can go there. One of the things that Michael's always trying to push me to do is make sure I talk about the podcast.
Yes.
Podcast. You can go there on the website, and there are all different forms of it, and you can actually, whatever version you like to use for podcast, it's there on the website, paulwinkler.com, and the website's all revamped. Beautiful, wonderful, so check it out. And make sure that you like us on Facebook, because when we put new videos out there, we want you to be the first to know that there's a new video out there, and you got to see it. It's really good stuff. Exciting ways we can kind of reach our public now that just never were available to us years ago. In the internet, in technology, great. This is the Investor Coaching Show, Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
Paul Winkler, hope you enjoyed this week's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there. And if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Till next week, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.